Behind the Knife, the surgery podcast. Relevant and engaging content designed to help you dominate the day.
We are proud to announce a comprehensive update to our general surgery oral board review content, covering all of the latest SCORE curriculum. We now have 123 up-to-date audio scenarios, all with expert commentary, 10 interactive video scenarios to test your knowledge, and 97 comprehensive operative descriptions that will have you smooth-talking your way through the exam. It's all accessible via our top-notch iOS and Android apps, and all for hundreds of dollars less than other review courses. It's the best content at maximum value. Learn more at behindtheknife.org. We hope you enjoy this scenario. Dominate the boards.
Behind the Knife Premium.
Trauma Resuscitation and ED Thoracotomy, written by Patrick Georgioff. Examiner Patrick Georgioff. Examinee Kevin Canary. A 24-year-old woman was shot in the chest and abdomen 15 minutes ago, and she will be arriving at your Level 2 Trauma Center in 5 minutes. Heart rate is 140, blood pressure 90 over 70, respiratory rate 30, and oxygen saturation 96% on a non-rebreather mask. How would you like to proceed?
So I'd start by gathering my team, assigning roles, and prepare equipment, including a chest tube, central line, and ultrasound. I'd also make sure that blood is available.
Okay, your whole team is there. All equipment is available and blood has been delivered to the trauma bay.
When the patient arrives, they'll perform a complete and efficient primary survey, marking ballistic wounds with radiopaque markers. I'd also like to have 2 to 3 functioning large bore IVs and send comprehensive labs and begin warming the patient as soon as possible.
Upon arrival, vital signs are unchanged. Heart rate is 140, blood pressure 90 over 70, respiratory rate 30, and oxygen saturation 96% on a non-rebreather mask. Primary survey is notable for absent breath sounds on the left, a weak femoral pulse, and a GCS of 15. Her extremities are cool. The following ballistic wounds are identified. Left lateral chest times 1, left flank times 1, and right flank times 1. You have one working 18-gauge IV.
Okay, so this patient is badly injured. I would like to utilize my trauma team to obtain additional peripheral IV access as soon as possible and start blood. Warmed whole blood if available. If not, then warm blood components in a 1-to-1-to-1 fashion. I'd also do an ultrasound of the heart to assess for cardiac injury and x-rays of the chest, abdomen, and pelvis to look for pain bullets to better understand the trajectory of the ballistic wounds. Finally, I would call the operating room and ask them to have the room ready.
Ultrasound of the heart shows hypovolemia. An x-ray shows a left-sided hemothorax and a retained bullet in the right mid-abdomen.
Okay, I would remain focused on starting blood and getting to the OR as soon as possible. I would also place a left chest tube in route.
Okay, a left chest tube is inserted and 500 cc's of blood immediately drains out. The OR is ready. What surgery are you going to perform?
So this patient has both thoracic and abdominal injuries. I would perform an exploratory laparotomy and, if indicated based on chest tube output, a left thoracotomy.
You have one working 20-gauge IV, but all other attempts at peripheral IV access have failed. The trauma team would like to know if there are any other options for venous access.
Certainly, at this point, I would place a large bore central line in the subclavian vein. Interosseous access is another option, although I prefer central access.
A subclavian line is placed and whole blood initiated. After 1 unit, the patient's heart rate is 140, blood pressure 90 over 70, respiratory rate 38, and oxygen saturation 86% on a non-rebreather mask. Her GCS is now 12. The emergency medicine team is preparing for intubation and asks what induction medications you would like to use.
I would try to avoid intubation at this time, as this would likely lead to cardiovascular collapse in the setting of hemorrhagic shock. I would proceed with the massive transfusion with special attention paid to the patient's airway and breathing, including basic maneuvers like a chin lift, jaw thrust, suctioning, and high-quality bag valve mass ventilation.
Okay. So 2 more units of whole blood are administered with good response, and with the maneuvers you described, oxygen saturation improves.
At this point, I would like to get the patient into the OR as soon as possible.
Exploratory laparotomy reveals transection of the right common iliac artery, but there are no other sources of hemorrhage. How would you approach this isolated injury?
I would start by obtaining proximal and distal control, performing a right to left medial visceral rotation and distal aortic cross clamp if needed. Next, I would place a shunt and confirm good flow. Then I would explore the ballistic track and assess for injury to other structures, including the iliac veins and ureter. Finally, I would determine whether a damage control surgery is indicated.
Okay, so let's walk it back a little bit. On arrival to the OR, you find the patient is now pulseless. What's next?
At this point, I would perform a resuscitative thoracotomy, cross-clamp the aorta, and perform cardiac massage while blood transfusions continue.
Thank you. That's the end of the scenario. Be sure to listen to Part B for high-yield commentary and other tips and tricks. Behind the Knife Premium. Trauma Resuscitation and ED Thoracotomy, written by Patrick Georgioff, examiner Patrick Georgioff, examinee Kevin Canary. A 24-year-old woman was shot in the chest and abdomen 15 minutes ago, and she will be arriving at your Level 2 Trauma Center in 5 minutes. Heart rate is 140, blood pressure 90 over 70, respiratory rate 30, and oxygen saturation 96% on a non-rebreather mask. How would you like to proceed?
So I'd start by gathering my team, assigning roles, and prepare equipment, including a chest tube, central line, and ultrasound. I'd also make sure that blood is available.
Okay, your whole team is there. All equipment is available and blood has been delivered to the trauma bay.
When the patient arrives, they'll perform a complete and efficient primary survey, marking ballistic wounds with radiopaque markers. I'd also like to have 2 to 3 functioning large bore IVs and send comprehensive labs and begin warming the patient as soon as possible.
Upon arrival, vital signs are unchanged. Heart rate is 140, blood pressure 90 over 70, respiratory rate 30, and oxygen saturation 96% on a non-rebreather mask. Primary survey is notable for absent breath sounds on the left, a weak femoral pulse, and a GCS of 15. Her extremities are cool. The following ballistic wounds are identified. Left lateral chest times 1, left flank times 1, and right flank times 1. You have one working 18-gauge IV.
Okay, so this patient is badly injured. I would like to utilize my trauma team to obtain additional peripheral IV access as soon as possible and start blood. Warmed whole blood if available. If not, then warm blood components in a 1-to-1-to-1 fashion. I'd also do an ultrasound of the heart to assess for cardiac injury and x-rays of the chest, abdomen, and pelvis to look for pain bullets to better understand the trajectory of the ballistic wounds. Finally, I would call the operating room and ask them to have the room ready.
Okay, so there's a lot going on here. Remember to approach all trauma patients systematically. This patient is in hemorrhagic shock. As such, efforts should be focused on starting resuscitation and getting to the OR as rapidly as possible. Meticulous identification of ballistic wounds is important to help understand trajectory. In this scenario, we have 3 ballistic wounds. The number of holes and bullets should always add up to an even number. If not, you are missing a ballistic wound on exam or the patient has a retained bullet. The use of adjuncts, specifically x-ray and ultrasound, are particularly helpful in these scenarios. X-ray can be used to identify a retained bullet, hence the decision to perform an abdominal x-ray in this scenario, and ultrasound can be used to rapidly assess the heart for injury, tamponade, and hypovolemia. Ultrasound of the heart shows hypovolemia, and x-ray shows a left-sided hemothorax and a retained bullet in the right mid-abdomen.
Okay, I would remain focused on starting blood and getting to the OR as soon as possible. I would also place a left chest tube in route.
Okay, a left chest tube is inserted and 500 cc's of blood immediately drains out. The OR is ready. What surgery are you going to perform?
So this patient has both thoracic and abdominal injuries. I would perform an exploratory laparotomy and, if indicated, based on chest tube output, a left thoracotomy.
It is super important to note that the absence of pericardial tamponade on ultrasound does not rule out a cardiac injury, especially in the setting of left hemothorax. If chest tube output is high, don't forget about the possibility of a cardiac injury. If cardiac injury is encountered during a left anterior lateral thoracotomy, most trauma surgeons recommend extending to a clamshell thoracotomy to improve visualization of the injured heart. You have one working 20-gauge IV, but all other attempts at peripheral IV access have failed. The trauma team would like to know if there are any other options for venous access.
Certainly, at this point, I would place a large bore central line in the subclavian vein. Interosseous access is another option, although I prefer central access.
Okay, so this is a common problem and definitely a frustrating one. The patient is bleeding to death and intravenous access is challenging. So you've got three options. You've got a peripheral IVs, a large bore central line, and or interosseous lines. So in general, peripheral IVs are first line. Two working 16-gauge IVs, one 16-gauge and two 18-gauge, or three 18-gauge IVs are all examples of sufficient IV access for massive transfusion. Large bore central lines, aka Cordis or MAC lines, are fantastic due to high flow rates. However, they require skill and experience for rapid placement. Oftentimes, the IJ is not accessible during a trauma situation due to the cervical collar being in the way or airway issues. Therefore, the subclavian and femoral lines are most often used. If there's a concern for intra-abdominal systemic venous injury, then a subclavian line is preferred. A subclavian line is placed and whole blood initiated. After one unit, the patient's heart rate is 140, blood pressure 90 over 70, respiratory rate 38, and oxygen saturation 86% on a non-rebreather mask. Her GCS is now 12. The emergency medicine team is preparing for intubation and asks what induction medications you would like to use.
I would try to avoid intubation at this time, as this would likely lead to cardiovascular collapse in the setting of hemorrhagic shock. I would proceed with the massive transfusion with special attention paid to the patient's airway and breathing, including basic maneuvers like a chin lift, jaw thrust, suctioning, and high-quality bag valve mask ventilation.
Okay. So two more units of whole blood are administered with good response, and with the maneuvers you described, oxygen saturation improves. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, here, this is good work. By appropriately recognizing the risk of cardiovascular collapse following intubation in a patient with hemorrhagic shock, this examinee avoided a critical fail. In 2025, the American College of Surgeons released the 11th edition of ATLS, which recognizes the importance of resuscitation before intubation in bleeding patients, boldly updating the decades-old primary service approach of ABC to CAB. Again, this is for patients who have hemorrhagic shock.
At this point, I would like to get the patient into the OR as soon as possible.
So from the beginning, this case has been about management of hemorrhagic shock and getting to the OR as soon as possible. This examinee's persistence is fantastic. Don't get caught up in the trap of a quote-unquote roadmap CT scan, especially if the patient is at all unstable. This will result in failure of the scenario. In general, penetrating abdominal injury is a free pass to the OR. However, there are some scenarios in which you might want to scan a stable, and I repeat, stable patient with a penetrating injury. And those include the possibility of isolated through and through injury to the lung or liver, as these injuries may be managed non-operatively. The possibility of a tangential injury that does not penetrate the chest or abdomen, and to evaluate a transpelvic injury to help determine management and or surgical approach. This patient does not meet any of these criteria. Exploratory laparotomy reveals transection of the right common iliac artery, but there are no other sources of hemorrhage. How would you approach this isolated injury?
I would start by obtaining proximal and distal control, performing a right to left medial visceral rotation and distal aortic cross clamp if needed. Next, I would place a shunt and confirm good flow. Then I would explore the ballistic track and assess for injury to other structures, including the iliac veins and ureter. Finally, I would determine whether a damage control surgery is indicated.
Okay, so let's walk it back a little bit. On arrival to the OR, you find the patient is now pulseless. What's next?
At this point, I would perform a resuscitative thoracotomy, cross-clamp the aorta, and perform cardiac massage while blood transfusions continue.
Thank you. That's the end of the scenario. This patient is clearly a candidate for resuscitative thoracotomy. To review, in 2024, the Western Trauma Association released new resuscitative thoracotomy guidelines for adults. This is currently the gold standard. In general, there are four topics that must be considered. The first, is it a blunt or penetrating injury? Remember that you have a much better chance of reviving a patient who suffered penetrating injury. The second, How long has the patient had CPR? A resuscitative thoracotomy may be indicated in patients with penetrating injury and less than 15 minutes of CPR, and blunt injury with less than 10 minutes of CPR. Third, determine if signs of life are present. Signs of life are defined as pupillary response, spontaneous ventilation, presence of a carotid pulse, measurable or palpable blood pressure, extremity movement, or cardiac electrical activity. If there are no signs of life and the patient is outside of the CPR window, then they are dead. Finally, transthoracic echocardiography is performed immediately. If there is no organized cardiac activity or pericardial tamponade, that patient is also dead. Thank you for listening to Behind the Knife Premium Oral Board Review. Dominate the day.
Be sure to check out our website at www.behindtheknife.org. Download our free app available for Apple iOS and Android. Simply search for Behind the Knife in the App Store or Google Play to download the app. In the app, you can listen to our episodes, watch high-yield videos, and even access our premium content, including our oral board reviews and trauma video atlas. You can also follow us on Twitter at Behind the Knife and on Instagram at Behind the Knife Podcast. If you like what you hear, please be sure to leave us a review. Content produced by Behind the Knife is intended for health professionals and is for educational purposes only. We do not diagnose, treat, or offer patient-specific advice. Thank you for listening. We appreciate your support.
Until next time, dominate the day.